So the work of the collective project, this work is based on the jazz aesthetic method, which is something about being committed to your own virtuosity. So come on up, Sean. There she is. She's the author of a book called Bulging Stories. Her work has been presented nationally at venues such as the Madam Walker Theater Center in Indianapolis, the Walker Arts Center, the Michigan Women's Festival, and she's received support from the NEA and also from the Rockefeller Foundation. Welcome. Thank you, Dr. Madison. I am a community artist. My community is national. My collaborators live in different parts of the world, and I am based here in Austin. That's an important point to me because it's the place that I'm speaking to you from as a community artist, someone who believes that art is a vehicle or can be used as a vehicle for social justice. And I'm really excited to talk about the Austin Project as an example of how an academic institution can create tools for social change that combines community, people, and the institution. The Austin Project was started by Dr. Jones in 2002, but the groundwork was laid a long time before that. So as a community person, I want to talk a little bit about that because it is key to the success of the Austin Project. I think Omi and I moved here around the same time, around 1990, more or less. Dr. Jones was seen in the community as kind of like our, you know, she was our professor. She was our person inside of the institution that kind of was the bridge between the university and the community. We called on her for all manner of things, to come speak at events, to come do rehearsals with us, to direct us in plays. Boyd Vance, who if any of you knew, you know that Dr. Jones was very busy when Boyd was alive and calling on her. He's the founder of the ProArts Collective. Vicki Boone, who used to be artistic director of Frontier at Hyde Park Theater, is another person that called on Dr. Jones. And I did. I started a theater company in 1993, and I called on her to help me realize the vision for the theater company. So when, in 2002, when she asked me to meet with her to talk about this new idea, you know, in my mind, I was already ready to participate because it was her. And I think that many of the other people who over time she called on felt the same way. I also, it's really important to also say that the Center for African and African American Studies has that same type of reputation in the community. We see the center as a very progressive place, a place that is open for all of us, us that are queer, us that are of different ethnicities, different gender expressions, different class backgrounds, and from different parts of the world. We see it as a place of possibility, and a place that we can come and be ourselves in and learn and also participate and give to. Dr. Ted Gordon had my first connection with him was when he, well, through only after working as anchor artist for the Austin Project, he asked me to participate in a series that was on race, gender, class, and sexuality. And so I spoke in that series, but then I also attended a lot of the events, and gradually over time, so did many people in the community that otherwise would not come on campus, frankly. So that's kind of just a tiny sense of some of the many years of groundwork and personal placement that Dr. Jones and Dr. Gordon created that became the seat that the Austin Project rested in. In that vein, Dr. Jones is part of a larger, ongoing, continuous conversation with artists that live in different parts of the world that are thinking about the jazz aesthetic, as a theatrical form, and also thinking about art as a vehicle for social justice. And she's writing a book about that at the moment. But some of those artists are Lori Carlos, Daniel Alexander Jones, Robbie McCauley, myself, Helga Davis, Grisha Coleman, and Carl Hancock Brooks. And so those artists later became guest artists for the Austin Project. So the Austin Project, Omi started it in 2002, and her idea was to bring artists, scholars, and activists together for a process. And so she was open to see what that process would be. It turned out that it was a creative process that uses jazz as its base, the jazz aesthetic as its base, and I'll talk to us a little bit more about that in a minute. Initially, it was pretty open. It turned out that it ended up being for women of color and their allies. Although that was not the initial framework, it turned out to be a very critical and important thing. And later on, as we would do public events and workshops, the public was invited to participate. So it became a very specific group, but also with points that were very open and that where community at large, both on campus and off campus, were invited to participate in different ways. The Austin Project, so basically we meet once a year for a minimum of 10 weeks, for a minimum of 4 hours a session. And so I facilitate the main part of the meeting times. And then at certain points we have guest artists that come and do workshops and sometimes direct work and do other things as helping the group move their work forward. So it's pretty intense, 4 hours a day. Usually we meet on Saturdays for a minimum of 10 weeks. This is a big commitment. The group, there are a total of about 30 women in the Austin Project, although each year we don't necessarily meet with all the women. We tend to have around 10 to 15 people per year session. And as we have all been in this ongoing conversation about the jazz aesthetic, it has become more and more important in not only how we are moving as artists using social justice, using art as a tool for social justice, but in how we are defining our own work. We knew that before 2002, before the Austin Project, we knew that Omi's specialty, from our point of view, was African and African-American art forms and aesthetics. And so this conversation began a long time ago, and over time, we have all been able to speak more clearly and work more efficiently and effectively because we have been able to name ourselves, because we have been able to speak in a more clear way about our intentions for our work. And the Austin Project has become an important way that we've been able to do that. It has been really critical that the Center for African and African American Studies has put resources behind this idea. This is one thing that very often happens with community artists is that it's ghettoized. Like, you know, you're invited to come in and they may pay for the space and they might pay for the food, but they probably won't pay you. But the Austin Project doesn't function that way. The artists are paid. There is conversation about being healthy, about being prosperous, and about creating work that is meaningful and creating community. And so through the through the resources that the center has been able to offer, Lori, Carl, Daniel, Robbie, and later Helga and Grisha will be coming to do some work, have been able to not only help the Austin Project by coming to direct and facilitate writing workshops for the Austin Project and the community at large, but they've also been able to work on their own work. Out of the work of the Austin Project, organically, the Performing Blackness series started. And so those of you that live here probably are familiar with that. Usually in September, the center produces a show. So I think my show was the first one in the series, Love Conjure Blues. And then we had Lori Carlos. And the pieces are kind of in development. which is very exciting. You don't have to necessarily have a polished, finished, completed thing that has, you know, already had a touring record, but something that you are really interested in working on. And so for both of my cases and with Lori, that was true. Lori Carlos, the Pork Chop Wars, and then Florinda Bryant, who is a member of the Austin Project and recently presented Southern Fried Check One.
Half-breed,
Southern Fried Check One. And that work, the writing of that work came out of her work as an Austin Project participant. And then she was able to have her work produced. Coming in the next series in September will be Daniel Alexander Jones. I think he's doing the Book of Daniel. And then after that, Helga Davis, who is also the composer for my work. And then after that, Grisha Coleman. And then I'm not sure who's to follow. But part of it is that there is a building that is very organic, very honest, and very, very much connected and all about liberation with a global perspective. So all of these artists, all this work, all this intention, all of this building, ultimately, and this is the jazz of it, it is ultimately it is about art as revolution. It is about the spirit, the virtuosity of individuality and spirit, and it is about the liberation of all people. So that is the intention underneath. As a result of this, we have a book coming out, the Austin Project book, which will be out soon, and we're very excited about that. It's going to feature some of the work of the women in the Austin Project, some of Omi's writings about the Austin Project and her deeper ideas behind that, some of my facilitation method and essays from and actual excerpts of work from the guest artists. And we are also looking at doing trainings in different parts of the country because a lot of our members of the Austin Project have moved. They live in New York, they live in, you know, just LA, lots of different places. And they're interested, and kind of gave us this idea that it would be really great to have Austin Project communities all over the country and in other parts of the world if possible. So we're also in the process of kind of creating those organic and very critical links. Just to speak a little bit about the jazz aesthetic, some of the things that I think are important is that it is female in its energy. So that doesn't mean that the bodies doing it are all female, but the energy of it is female. It is about revolution. It is about liberation, and it is about the process. So the way that I facilitate the workshops in the Austin Project is all about the process. It is taking the idea that the body is the instrument, and that virtuosity and individuality are critical, and the more clear you are, the more courageous you are, the more honest you are in giving your individual voice, the better you function in society, the better and more clear your artwork is, and the better you can literally hear. So a lot of the work that we do is really about just identity, talking about identity, and telling our stories. And, you know, we start with the mother. we could take a month of just me asking questions about the women's relationships with their mother, their mother's relationship with her mother, you know, and on and on. And using that as a way to look at history, both the literal personal history, but also the landscape of dreams. You know, what's in the way? What is the expectation? What is the you know, where is it that you dream? And where is it that you don't dream? And potentially why? A lot of what I do is just basically try to walk with people through the process of being present. Because as you might be able to imagine, a lot of that work is really hard. It's the deep, hard work that you may not do by yourself, or maybe you've done a lot of it and there's still more to do. So we really work a lot on the art of being present and of listening. Listening to each other and listening to ourselves and seeing how our bodies respond, you know, in any given moment. And asking, and there are three really important questions that I use that people that have done workshops with me are familiar with. But what am I feeling? What is that about? And how does that affect my writing? Those questions are the key. You follow any one of those questions in any moment of doing that type of work, and you'll just be busy for a long time, for a very long time, making personal discoveries and also creating space to bear witness to other people. So the work is about the process, and then what happens is organically, people just, you know, create work. Like I said, Florinda's piece came out of these workshops. Those of you that were here on the opening of the conference here saw Teresa Burke Garcia. That work came out of the work in the Austin Project. And here's what Lori Carlos says about, and Lori Carlos is one of my mentors, and I actually started mentoring other people and doing workshops because one day I was just basically whining and complaining, and Lori said, "You need to mentor other people." And so I started doing that in 1995 because I said, okay. And she was right. She was right. I've learned a lot. Lori says, "Because I have written White Chocolate," and White Chocolate is an award-winning play that Lori did. I think she got an Obie, didn't she, for that play. And it's about basically her relationship with her father. "Because I have written White Chocolate, I can now speak about other things that are not autobiographical and that are also not in my child's voice, which I had been unable to do for a while. I've given voice to my matriarchal lineage. It is for those women who couldn't speak, for those women who were speaking for themselves but were never heard." And then there's, you know, it goes into a longer thing. And that's Lori Carlos, and it's in a book published by TCG called Plays by African American Women, Moonmarked and Touched by Sun. And I think with that, I want to just play a little clip of, you know, from the Austin Project. This actually we put together for ourselves, so please pardon the bad sound and the other things like that. And it certainly does, it cannot show our entire history. It's just a little clip that we kind of put together trying to make sure that we archive our work together.
What that means to me is that we really are living in, it's a cliche in some of the perilous times, and for me, this is the work that we all do together, and then the work that you all end up doing individually becomes the challenge to the perilous time. We create for one another a kind of place to be rigorous, to be honest, to be supportive, to be clear, and we take all of that out into the world knowing that we've got this other support network. And right now, I think that's the way to go. That's the way for me to go against the war in Iraq, against poverty, against misogyny, you know, just do the whole list. Started the Austin Project, I didn't really know, I didn't know a lot. One of the things I didn't know is that the jazz festival would be central to it, but it has become that. Regardless of what your individual artistic aesthetics might be, the way the Austin Project functions is through a jazz aesthetic.
The Austin Project is the vision and under the direction of Dr. Joan Jones. It was her vision to bring, initially it was not women, but it became an event, it became a series that actually it showed her that it needed to be women. So initially it was to bring artists, scholars, and activists, and as it turned out, it specifically worked. So this is the third year. I've been the anchor artist for 3 years, and what that simply means is I lead or facilitate the process of the women, scholars, artists, and activists going through a creative something. So what that something is too big to talk about in just a few minutes, but essentially we sit down in a circle and we do life. And since art is not separate from life, what we find is that we make art.
I felt that my goal as the anchor artist
needed to be structured around the idea that we are more connected than we are not. And based on Joan's Beauty and Place project, I had a lot of freedom to kind of figure out how we walk together as a group. We met for 10 weeks, 4 hours once a week. We were trained with visiting artists.
I used a lot of poetry and a lot of meter and Spanish language to write in English, so that definitely was a lot of people. And I'm really excited to explore the jazz aesthetic and to kind of understand what that word is.
Notice what it is for you that you say and how that feels. The rest of us, you know, a big thing in jazz is witnessing. So we are always in the circle together. We are always interacting and supporting and in conversation with each other, even when we are silent. So this is an opportunity for you to practice listening. There's a lot of us in the room, and just really, really listen to each person as, you know, as with your undivided attention, and then just notice what that's like for you. And ask yourself throughout the time of listening, what am I feeling? What is that about? How does that affect my life? So let's just go over it.
I like movements. I do NEA, which is a dance aerobics. I do water aerobics. So I like the action of moving. I feel it's a prince. And so jazz aesthetic, I think, fits within that area because it's about body movement, words, sound, picture, any, you know, the arts itself. And it's a reflection of what of the culture that we live in.
I feel like I have to come to ask the bride to review. So, and I always feel like the timing on Sundays or weekly, whatever, is perfect because I run out. You know, of whatever it is that gets me to the next week. And so then, when I know we're coming to the end and our performance comes, I like take as much as I can, try to give as much as I can, because I know we're done, we'll be done.
Yeah.
So at least for a year or whatever. But right now, it's necessary.
So I was always interested in how the actor's body is related to what the actor is saying. So I started using all the words that I'm informed, and that's what I'm sort of interested in hearing from you today.
But what is important about the Austin Project is that there is a spiritual reality that undergirds it, and I didn't acknowledge that, wasn't clear about that when I started this in 2002.
If you have a higher something that you're connected to, you can keep going. You can get knocked down, but you can get back up and try to get it. And without that invisible strength that you pull from, you might just sit down and knock you down. But we don't have time to sit down. We keep getting up. As long as we can get up, we have to keep getting up. I think that's very important.
I think you hear this word in my mind, and something that you said is ready, and then you laugh, and it's how you know when you're ready, and when you have teachers, great teachers.
When you're born already, when you're born,
yeah.
You're ready.
The Austin Project bases much of its work in a jazz aesthetic. A jazz aesthetic as applied to theater. I have had the privilege of coming to know this aesthetic primarily at the hands of Lori Curlis. The women of the Austin Project will have an opportunity tomorrow to continue the work of the Austin Project with Lori Curlis in a workshop that she will present to us. And that is a part of the way the Austin Project works. Lori has insisted, she does insist, that whatever we do, if we want to call it art, it will be absolutely real. She insists that we not wallow in the ways we've always done things, because those ways only re-inscribe the problems we already have. Mm-hmm. Instead, she insists quite firmly that we be our best selves. And for that, I am really grateful because I grow every time I have a conversation with her.
I danced on St. Mark's Place with my shoes, sending tides of blue, full to the end of Third Avenue, awash with afternoon rush, my heart so hungry for a voice, I shaped wild days in a small, untried noise. No commitment to my own dreams. The bones poking through skin held me up for blisters. Gladys, Kenny, and the friends we made daily crashed in whispers through the night. We walked sealed in andirons, tossed with secondhand care across 8th Street. I've fallen in love on a daily basis in 8th Street tangles. The music is all I remember.
It's just all
part of the process. Okay, so we're going to keep going. But I'm going to change the music just a little bit.
Yeah, very much so. Improvisation. I mean, that's the way of my life since my mom's life, too. So it's the only way I know how to live. It's hard to work within structures that don't expect you to work that way, like with school and stuff. But I fit my way in. And it's great to work in other organizations that work under that aesthetic. So
what I want to do, even though we're seated in this kind of formal way, I'd like us to keep the energy and spontaneity that we often have when we're working in a larger circle. But I wanted to see this in a somewhat more presentation. So, would one trio or the quartet jump up and get us done?
We would. A tale of some women with no rights and how they raise their kids. To me, it didn't feel like all three of us working on one thing aren't we even supposed to. I felt like in those moments, like when I was doing the movement for somebody else's text, like I was honoring them and really focused on those words. And then when I was reading the words for somebody else, I felt like I was really focused on their movement. So it was about the person who originally did the writing for me. And so I felt like there was like a partnership there and like multiple partnerships, but that I was serving somebody else.
And I hope that they be ultimately separating the person. It was really great working with the team members. And that I can take the leadership role in this feels good sometimes. Not to always have to be the leader or have to make decisions. You know, so even though I was the one decided how I wanted it, I appreciate you taking the leadership.
Water is what
cause your death.
A gavel and agua milagrosa sold to you by a stranger, promising relief for
creating bones and our
pain. You know, everybody can make a difference. Everybody. And I think that's what people forget to tell you guys. You can make a difference. You do make a difference. And up there, big and small is all the same. It's only humans that judge and have these scales and this whole thing on judgment. But change is change. And it has to start somewhere. So you just go around and do what you do. No matter where I go, I'm the same person. If I'm living in Europe, I'm still me. I'm sure there's got some going on over there that needs to be fixed. And you don't have to look too hard. If you can do it, it just jumps right out at you. It's just one of those things. I guess all warriors, you know what they say, we always got a war to fight. So we just choose different weapons.
Thank you. Thank you both very much.
So even when you're back here doing that in the presence of whatever it is, you may not understand every single line that's on the page. You may not understand what all those voices are on the page. You may not know why you had to create these five characters. You may not understand that the person who walked through, who you work with, who you're screaming at, is trust the instrument that you have and the journey you're in. Because you are the instrument that you are. And this is your journey. The very person that you sat next to and said, I never worked with that. That's the song you'll be humming. After 5 years of the world, that's the song that comes back to heal. That's the song that comes back to heal. And so as you move through the journey of being who you are as artists in this space, in the world, and as I say these things, I have the mirror right in front of me, I'm speaking. Trust the instrument that you're playing with. Even if you're playing in the group class, that's your instrument. You have the moment. Yes. Grow, grow.
Obviously, from our point of view, life and art are not separate. So as we are in this process, we recognize and we are mindful of and sensitive to the fact that we are about creating our lives. And so in the process of doing that, with support from the center, where we have not had to explain ourselves, we have not had to beg, we have not had to bend, we have had the luxury of having resource to do what we came in the room to do, we have created community. Every year we do events on campus and we do events in the community, and as a result there's been a huge success of exchange and of widening of the circle. So I thank Dr. Jones for the vision, and I thank Dr. Jones and Dr. Gordon for the center. And thank you all for this. Ask the two speakers to please come up to here so that we can have questions and such.
I thank you very much for your contribution to the panel and all that. I'm going to start off by posing a question to two of you because the panel is about art and social activism. And I think that one of the things that links the approaches that both of you are taking is the way that you're using new forms and structures. And that you're also exploring performance as a kind of a laboratory for work that leads into social activism. So I wonder if each of you could speak a little bit about that.
New forms and structures. Some of it is so intuitive. I don't know. I don't have a script in front of me, so it's always hard for me just to talk off the top of my head about these things. I can say this. When I do field work and I'm in the process of writing about what it means to do field work and figure out all that's going on around me, it's the form of performance that concretizes the unproductive messiness of that experience. In other words, life and experience can become so overwhelming because it's happening at so many different registers, all right? There's the visceral moment, present moment, but then there's the history that came before it. And then beyond the history that came before it are the implications of its politics and power dynamics. So when you're living in the moment, all of that is too much to comprehend because you're living in the moment. When that is transformed or transposed into a performance, I then have to think about it in more concrete ways. Because it has to be written down, it has to have a sequence, it has to have some kind of order. I have to then share that experience with performers. They have why questions and how questions. So it makes me contemplate life as lived in ways that are more clearer, more ordered, more historical, and ultimately more political. Each show based on each ethnographic project becomes a new form because it's a different question. It's different actors. It's a different time. The instruments that are performers, the directors, the venue, and all of that, those kinds of instruments demand a different form.
The Austin Project is living inside of a jazz aesthetic, which is an African-American art form that is old and based in ancient blood memory. So the form, I feel, is very traditional, and we are improvising inside of that and making something new inside of something that is traditional for us. Part of the reason that so many of us have been in conversation for so long with Dr. Jones is that it is hard creating space in the world to get support, to do the work, and you have to train in this aesthetic, people have to walk with you to learn how to do it. They've got to do it. And they've got to be present walking with you, and that's how you learn how to do it. And that feels very traditional for me, and I think for us as a people. And the idea of witnessing, call and response, no separation between the audience and what is performed, because we're all present in the room together and are therefore responsible. And then inside of that, everything can happen. You know, we can be very different and coexist and make something really beautiful. I didn't say this, but perhaps some of you know this. Lori Carlos is one of the original cast members in For Colored Girls, who's considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. Robbie McCauley was in the cast too, wasn't she? Yeah. And so we are being trained by women who have knocked the door down. They've already bled, you know, they've created new spaces for us, and we're just simply moving forward in the ground that's already been set.
I'd like to open it up to the audience for questions. comments?
As an artist, I'm really inspired by creative visions. And as an educator, by your pedagogical process, you're both very extremely process-oriented. And I'm curious, as an activist, how does this, you mentioned theater for the press, and mentioned revolution and liberation, how does this transfer, in a sense, to the audience, this sort of, you mentioned Jill Bowen rehearsal kind of for the revolution, or rehearsal for that next step. Does it transfer your work to the audience? Is there that follow through?
It's interesting because in class, yes, was it Wednesday? One of my students asked a question about a particular performance. They were reading an ethnography called Fear as a Way of Life by a woman, her last name is Green. And they were talking about the Guatemalan textiles and how these textiles were made and the elaborate process and how it was very much a part of a tradition and a culture, and how tourism just deflates it to just crass materialism, and people will hang it on their walls and not understand the story behind that. And so one of my students, I'm really answering your question, one of my students raised her hand and said, well, what good does it do to know all that now? Does that mean we shouldn't buy it, or we should buy it? So what good does it do, you know, to be in the labor of creating the Austin Project, or be involved in the labor of creating a water rights? The show before that was called Is It a Human Being or a Girl? What, we do these performances, and we have hopes that it will somehow create another voice to change the world. So why does it matter? What does it do? Is there follow-through? I can say that I'm not sure all the time if members of my audience will leave the theater and then want to be a part of the water justice movement. I am not sure all the time if every member of my audience will then care about the importance of fair trade or corporate globalization. I'm not sure. But I do believe that when you make performances and when you make art and knowledges are revealed and people are witness to that, it will haunt them. It becomes, I think, for some more than others, inscribed on their consciousness and in their spirit. For some more than others, some it may just roll off. But I have a hope and the promise that what is said by telling the truth will penetrate in some way. What materially will happen? What will they actually do with that? Will they become part of the revolution? I hope they'll be part of a community that wants to make and affect change. I know that change will never, ever come if we don't tell the story. If we are not artists who work toward presenting certain truths and certain kinds of realities, then there's absolutely no hope. All right. This, I think, what we're doing provides the promise. All right. Foucault said knowledge is power. I believe that. Okay. I also believe that there are very practical things that you can do. For all of the performances that I've done, for this water rights performance, inside the program, there were a list of organizations that people may call, join, look on the internet to find out more about water justice. There were also a list of organizations that they could, if they want to not only find more about it, but they want to join and do something about it, there were places that they could go to do that. I honestly believe that change happens through coalitions. That people who say, you know, everything is a mess, the war is a mess, you know, what's happening in terms of torture is a mess. Everything. What can I do about it? Well, it's not brain surgery. It's not rocket science. You are not the only person who cares about injustice. There are alliances across this planet, in very small corners of the world, in very small communities, in very large ones. Whether it's a group of people starting an institution like Joni Jones did, one woman, and now look at that. One person, look at that. It's amazing. So I fundamentally believe that there's no excuse for anyone to complain and say, well, I'm one person, I can't do anything. You know, this kind of work where people have formed groups, be a joiner. You know, just, there's power in numbers and there's so much power in people coming together to make change. And that's done. But I think it begins with an awareness. It begins with someone telling the story. It begins with a kind of awakening. And I think that's what art does. It motivates you to form coalitions.
Anybody, next question? Any thought or comment? I think that something that was in both of your work that you didn't really talk about and that he mentioned as well is this idea of laboratory, a place where the participants themselves can find voice in the work that you do. And I know that you've done that with your students and your project in your community. Can you talk a little bit about that as a choice and activist choice?
I'm not sure. Would you say the question in a different way?
The question is, how do you get your participants to become a part of the process beyond the rehearsal room?
Oh, okay. In the Austin Project, the people that are members of the Austin Project are already very active in their communities, in their families, in their lives. And so they come in already well exercised in their work, whether they are artists, scholars, or activists. And then what has happened is we've been building on that over the years. Each one of them is a leader and connects with lots and lots and lots of people. They have more tools now, so they connect more effectively. Many of them have made courageous changes in their lives that have made their work more efficient, I believe. And some of them work with youth, so they have their own groups that they're working with youth. Some of them have formed those organizations themselves, and some of them were already a part of organizations that were already doing the work. But it is just something that organically just builds. And then when audiences, whether they're on campus or in the community, come to the events that we do, we stay in touch. We put them in touch with other organizations or individuals. You know, if they ask, we can direct them to other people. But basically, I just think that we're weaving a big web, and it's kind of like connecting what's already out there. It gives us an opportunity to kind of connect some of those dots, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing.